and more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a packed show. I'm not sure how much I'll get in, but I hope to deal with resveratrol expanding our life, the omega-3 fatty acids improving a marker for aging, a large study on tea and the polyphenols, what it does for us, preventing cancer, vitamin C and menopause, and arthritis prevention, what you should eat and how that will help you, and a lot more. Then from our public health segment, we're going to take a look at Monica Young's investigation. She attended a convention on psychiatry, and she came away with some really interesting insights. They're looking not only at how profitable it is to declare mental illness in babies, now they want to go after newborns and do genetic screening for mental illness. So that's really disturbing, but that's where they're at, and we'll give you the latest on it. Commentaries today, as many as we can do. John Whitehead, The Emperor's New Clothes, The Naked Truth About American Police State, and we are in a police state. The government admits to false flag terrorisms. I'll tell you which governments and which false flag events. And the next time then someone says, oh, you know, that's all conspiracy stuff. No, these are actual governments acknowledging that they did these things. Also, Hillary Clinton gave a candid remark about how the Democratic Party represents banks. Well, we knew that. We're also going to take a look at Fukushima's children are dying of cancer at an accelerated rate. And another silent spring, George Monbiot, about a follow-up to Rachel Carson, what's happening today. Torture and death in America's prisons, Andrea Damon. We're also going to, if time permits, from a John Whitehead, what I don't like about life in the American police state, and from John Cozy, American, an ordinary nation ruled by greedy, unjust, and inhumane people. So I won't be able to get to everything, but I'll get to as many as I can. From Health and Nutrition today, we have a lot to share with you. Let us begin. First and foremost, we're always looking for a way to expand our life. The journal Aging reported the results of research involving honeybees, which revealed an ability for resveratrol, now that's a compound that occurs in grapes, to reduce food intake and extend life. Now, it's been shown to lengthen the lives of yeasts, worms, fruit flies, and mice. The study is the first to evaluate the effect of the compound on honeybees. And researchers compared the effects of an unenhanced honeybee diet to diets containing two different concentrations of resveratrol. And they found that it increased by 38%. So that's important. One more reason to have grapes, grape seed extract, or resveratrol into the diet. Then you should also be using the omega-3 fatty acids. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Brain, Behavior, and Immunity. This was done at Ohio State University, and they found that it has a protective effect in preserving the telomere length among middle-aged and older men and women. Now, why is that important? Because we have discussed at length how the telomere length has been correlated with age-related disease and premature death, meaning the longer the telomere, the longer you live. The shorter the telomere, the shorter you live. Now, telomeres are bits of DNA, and they cap and protect the ends of chromosomes. And they've been compared to the coatings at the end of shoelaces that prevent them from fraying. So the current investigation revealed an increase in telomere length in association with reductions in participants' plasma omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids. Quite simply, if you take omega-3 fatty acids, you can help improve the length of your telomeres, hence live longer. Higher vitamin D levels associated with fewer multiple sclerosis symptoms. This was published in the Annals of Neurology, and it was from University of California, San Francisco. They found a reduction in brain lesions and disease activity in multiple sclerosis patients who had higher levels of vitamin D. Also, melatonin and exercise shows a very important part of Alzheimer's treatment. This was published in Neurobiology of Aging. And researchers in Spain described the benefits of exercise and the hormone melatonin in this model for Alzheimer's disease. They were using 10 milligrams of melatonin. By the way, melatonin is very good also for cancer patients. And also, yesterday I had an in-depth discussion about lycopene and tomatoes. Well, in the journal Neurology, a Finnish research group found there was a protective effect from the carotenoid lycopene, which occurs in high amounts in tomatoes, and it reduces the risk of stroke. And there was 1,031 men participating in this ischemic heart disease risk factor cohort study, and it reduced the risk by 55%. Wow, that's a big reduction. So make sure you're getting your lycopene each day. That can be helping prevent a stroke. There was also a large study that showed the impact of tea in protecting your digestive system against cancer. This is the Shanghai Women's Health Study. It was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And it showed a protective effect for those of who are drinking tea against cancer of the stomach, esophagus, and colon. They looked at 69,000 women who were in the study between ages of 40 and 70. And they followed them for an average of 12 years. There was a 14% lower risk of all digestive system cancers in those that had tea three or more times per week. So that's good. And I would suggest, spiking your tea. So when you have the cup of tea, take a 200 milligram capsule of green tea. If you're a menopausal woman, this study from PLOS One shows that vitamin C helps prevent bone loss with the decline in female hormones during menopause. This was done by a group of scientists at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York, and they tested the effect of vitamin C supplementation, in this case in mice, and found that it made an enormous difference in bone mineral density. So the takeaway message, make sure that you're getting your vitamin C every day. I'm suggesting 3,000 and maybe milligrams up to, and buffered in divided doses, up to 10,000 milligrams a day. Also, a major study of 14,000 men over 50 were in the Physician's Health Study. Most of these are doctors. This was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association and showed that multiple nutrient supplements were good against cancers. And there was a statistically significant decrease in cancers when you took supplements. And these weren't even high-potency supplements. And finally, coenzyme Q10 and garlic reduce atherosclerosis progression in a clinical trial. This was published in the Journal of Cardiovascular Disease Research. And what it found in middle-aged men, a protective effect of coenzyme Q10 and garlic extract, it protect against inflammation and protect against atherosclerosis. So, and it reduced C-reactive protein, a marker of inflammation. So easy ways to help prevent stroke, cancers, multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, all important. I'm Gary Noll. Now let's go over and take a look at some issues on the environment. First up, from Professor Harvey Wasserman, and this is the latest, this is on nukefree.org. Fukushima's children are dying. That's the title of the article. quote, some 39 months after the multiplex explosions at Fukushima, thyroid cancer rates among nearly all the children have skyrocketed to more than 40 times normal. More than 40% of 375,000 young people, that's nearly 200,000 kids tested by the Fukushima Medical University near the smoldering reactor, now suffer from precancerous thyroid abnormalities. The rate is accelerating. More than 120 childhood cancers have been indicated, where just three would be expected. And that's according to Joseph Mangano, the executive director of the Radiation and Public Health Project. The nuclear industry and its apologists continue to deny this public health tragedy. Now, if you've heard on this program many times, we show you that the government and TEPCO, the utility that controls it, are lying about everything. But the deadly epidemic at Fukushima is consistent with impacts suffered among children in 1979 at Three Mile Island, in 1986 at Chernobyl. But a wide range of independent studies confirms heightened infant death rates and excessive cancers among the general population, excessive death, mutation, and disease rates among local animals were confirmed by the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture and local journalists. In the 1980s, federal judge Sylvia Rambo blocked a class action suit by some 2,400 central Pennsylvania downwinders, meaning people who lived downwind from Three Mile Island, claiming not enough radiation had escaped to harm anyone. And so on the one hand, we now know that that there was an enormous amount of radiation that escaped, and Three Mile Island owners had quietly paid millions to downwinders, victims, in exchange for gag orders, meaning they could not tell people that they had been paid anything. So when the media, always in compliance with corporate interests, say there were no one was hurt or killed, it's simply not true. And here's one judge, Sylvia Rambo, who blocked the action of 2,400 people. And at Chernobyl, there are 5,000 studies that showed more than 1 million people died. And the radiation effect on youngsters in downtown Belarus and Ukraine had been horrific. According to Joseph Mangano, 80% of the children of Chernobyl born downwinders since the accident had been harmed by a wide range of impacts: birth defects, thyroid cancers, long-term heart, respiratory, and mental illnesses, problems. So, they are dying, and it's serious. Also, I thought you'd find this of interest. It's from George Monbiot, and from monbiot.com. It's called Another Silent Spring. I'll quote it. Here's our choice. We wait and see whether a class of powerful pesticides made by Bayer and Syngenta is indeed pushing entire ecosystems to oblivion, or we suspend their use while proper trials are conducted. The natural world versus two chemical companies. How hard can this be? Papers published over the past few weeks suggest that neonicotinoids, pesticides implicated in killing or disabling bees, have similar effects on much of the life on Earth. On land and in water, these neurotoxins appear to be degrading entire food chains. Licensed before sufficient tests were conducted, they are now the world's most widely used pesticides. We are just beginning to understand what we've walked into. A paper in Nature last week showed a strong correlation between neonicotinoid concentrations and the decline of birds, such as swallows and skylarks and yellowhammers, wagtails, starlings, whitethroats. It couldn't demonstrate causation, but it was elegantly designed to exclude competing factors. The precipitous loss of insects caused by this pesticide is the simplest, most obvious explanation, as all these birds depend on insects to feed their young. Where the chemical was heavily used, bird populations fell 3.5% a year. Where it was not used, they held strong. At this rate, it doesn't take long to engineer a world without songs. Another paper reports that residues of neonicotinoids were found in all the soil samples the researchers took. These chemicals are highly persistent. Sold to farmers as precise and targeted, they are some of the least discriminate pesticides ever produced. When they are used to treat seeds, just 5% is absorbed by the plant. The rest soaks into the soil, with potentially lethal impacts on the animals that maintain its structure and fertility. They are also water-soluble. Recent papers suggest a collapse in the diversity and abundance of invertebrates in water running off farms where neonicotinoids are used. Mayflies and caddisflies, essential to the survival of many aquatic ecosystems, are essentially vulnerable. Another new paper provides compelling evidence linking these chemicals to colony collapse disorder, the sudden disappearance of honeybees that's now trashing the livelihood of beekeepers in the United States. 50% of all the colonies exposed to neonicotinoids disappeared in the course of one winter. None, by the way, disappeared, and untreated swarms vanished. Worldwide contamination, indiscriminately wiping out wild animals, including those on which farming depends, these are the findings of an analysis of 800 different scientific papers, also just published. How much more obvious does the case for action need to be? Sure, there's plenty that we do not yet know. We know almost nothing about the long-term cumulative effects of these chemicals, or about what neonicotinoids do to birds that eat contaminated seeds, to mammals and amphibian populations, to coral reefs, to marine life of any kind. Governments went into a blind approving neonicotinoids before they had even a fraction of the necessary knowledge. Far from being essential to food production, these pesticides are a serious threat to food supplies through their likely impact on bees and soil animals. They are well designed for lazy farming, but their advantages vanish in the face of more sophisticated methods such as integrated pest management. The only sensible response to the little we know so far is a global moratorium pending further research for all purposes except the control of human disease. In August 1962, after extracts of Rachel Carson's forthcoming book Silent Spring were published, President Kennedy launched a commission to investigate the impacts of the pesticide DDT. Within 10 years, it was banned from use in the United States. This was despite lawsuits and a massive lobbying and disinformation campaign by the chemical industry, alongside the usual accusations of hysteria and other alleged female pathologies. It suggests that Carson was seeking to destroy American farming on behalf of the Soviet Union. The smears continue to this day. Corporate front groups concocted a myth that DDT was banned worldwide as a result of Carson's book, causing the deaths of millions through malaria. In fact, the ban, through the Stockholm Convention, is for agricultural purposes but not disease control. DDT would soon have become useless against malaria had it continued to be used by farmers. The wider their exposure, the more quickly mosquitoes became resistant. Kennedy and his successors held firm. And compare this with the British government's response to attempts to control neonicotinoids. It threw everything it had against the European Union proposal to suspend their use on flowering crops. Owen Paterson, the worst environmental secretary England has ever had, who was wrote privately to Syngenta to reassure it that, it, quote, our efforts to stop the suspension will continue and intensify in the coming days. His department commissioned a study claiming to show that the bees were not being harmed. It was so flawed that no journal would take it. The lead author soon left it and went to work for Syngenta. The government's chief scientist, Sir Mark Walport, made widely misleading statements about the science and used scare tactics and emotional blackmail to try to keep the pesticides in circulation. Fortunately, the government's campaign failed, and a two-year moratorium, though limited only to certain flowering crops, came into force across the European Union last year. The case for a global moratorium is just as strong. So once more, the government weighs in on the wrong side. So what we, the people, have to do is we have to start letting our legislators here in the United States know, a moratorium on neonicotinoids. I'm Gary Noll. We're here to share a lot of insights and information with you. I'm going to take on some social issues, and after that, I would like your input. This is from Andrea Damon, Torture and Death in American Prisons. Quote, viewed from the high-rise multi-million-dollar apartments lining the south side of New York Central Park, colloquially referred to as Billionaire's Row, Rikers Island looms just over the East River. The sprawling island prison complex, which warehouses over 12,000 inmates in squalor and misery, lies between Manhattan, home to a fifth of America's billionaires, and the Bronx, where half of all children live in households that do not have enough to eat. Quote, there's lots of brutality, horrible brutality, the former director of mental health services at Rikers Island told the New York Times. On Monday, the newspaper reported, based on a review of internal prison documents, that over a single 11-month period, 129 inmates were beaten so severely by prison guards that their injuries were, quote, beyond the capacity of doctors at the jail or clinics to treat. In 4 out of 5 cases, the prisoners were beaten after they had been handcuffed. The Times article describes blood-splattered examination room walls and inmates bound and beaten unconscious with brass knuckles, even as medical staff begged the guards to stop the beating. This is not happening in some remote third-world dictatorship, but in the financial center of world capitalism. All the brutality of class relations in America, where an oligarchy of a few tens of thousands gorge itself while condemning millions to misery, is expressed in America's teeming prisons. Rikers Island is the rule, not the exception. Last month, the Miami Herald ran an interview with an inmate who recounted how he had been roused by guards early in the morning to clean up, quote, large chunks of human skin that had peeled off Darian Rainey, a 50-year-old inmate, scalded to death the previous night by guards at Miami's Dade Correction Institution. The guards had turned one of the prison showers on into a torture chamber controlled from a nearby mop closet. They made a regular practice of locking their victims in the shower, laughing, cracking jokes, and asking, is it hot enough for you? Over the 4th of July weekend, 3 more bodies were found in Florida state prisons under mysterious circumstances, bringing the total number of in-custody prison deaths currently under investigation in Florida to 10. And such incidents, widespread despite being only occasionally and superficially reported in the press, make a complete mockery of America's pretensions to being a model of democracy and the defender of democratic rights around the world. A large share of those who are killed or tortured in the United States prisons are mentally ill or handicapped. That's according to one BBC investigation, quote, more than 80 people with mental health problems have died as a result of abuse or neglect in the United States jails. The report notes that there are more than 1 million people with mental health problems in U.S. prisons. More than 1 million, due in part to reduced government funding for mental health. Correctional facilities hold up to 95% of the institutionalized mentally ill population in the United States. Conditions are emerging in American prisons reminiscent of the debtors' prisons of Charles Dickens' England. Last month, a 55-year-old mother of 7 died in prison while serving a 2-day sentence for failure to pay a truancy fine imposed because her child missed a day of school. She was one of tens of thousands of poor people who were put in jail for failing to pay fines or other court costs. In the United States, every social problem, whether gun violence or domestic abuse, is treated as a policing problem and reason for imposing longer sentences and hiring more police. The U.S. prisons are more filled with people than any other developed country in the world. In a sprawling prison system that sweeps up hundreds of thousands of people every year. The latest revelations of torture and murder in U.S. prisons touched on just one aspect of the intimidation, violence, and brutality inflicted every single day by police in America. Since 2010, the Albuquerque Police Department has killed 26 people, including James Boyd, a mentally ill homeless man whose killing sparked nationwide outrage. Last week, it was reported that the Albuquerque Police Department was purchasing at least 350 more assault rifles, similar to those that killed Boyd. According to official statistics, the police on average commit between one and two justifiable homicides every day in the United States. Nighttime, no-knock police raids have become increasingly prevalent in the United States, with over 100 raids by SWAT teams taking place every 24 hours. Last month, the American Civil Liberties Union reported that the Defense Department had transferred more than $4.3 billion in military assets to police departments, including helicopters and armored vehicles. The growth of police violence is an expression of the brutalization of society amid soaring social inequality and an endless and escalating series of wars. And while the wealth of the country's billionaires has more than doubled since 2008, workers' wages are being slashed and social programs gutted. In Detroit, which once had the highest standard of living of any American city, thousands of city residents had their water turned off just this month. By the way, it was 151,000. And while the city retirees are seeing their pensions slashed to pay off the city's millionaire bondholders, police violence currently targets the poorest and most vulnerable elements of society, including the homeless and mentally ill. But these practices are being prepared for use against a far broader section of the population amid the growth of popular opposition to the inequality we live by and by wars. This is part of the broader attack on democratic rights. The president defends his right to order the assassination of American citizens. The CIA steals documents from the Senate with impunity, and Americans' most intimate personal data is collected, stored, analyzed, and read by the intelligence agencies. As the trappings of democracy fall away, the dictatorship of the financial elite over society becomes more brutal, naked, and open. Inequality, war, and police violence are not blemishes on an otherwise healthy social order. Rather, they are expressions of the intractable crisis of the capitalist system itself and the inevitable outcome of growing poverty and misery on one hand and the enormous concentrations of wealth on the other. The only alternative to this state of affairs is the organization of a mass movement of the working class to oppose it. End quote. I'd like to get your feedback on that, please. On our talkback, you can call us at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Here is something I found of interest. As many of you know, because a lot of you were there with me when we protested at the annual American Psychiatric Association meeting, you can see the demonstration. It's been posted up on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and on my own Facebook and blog.garynall.com. I asked numerous psychiatrists, did they have any evidence whatsoever that there was brain chemical imbalance? They all said no. And I said, then how in the world can you possibly say that a six-month-old baby is suffering from bipolar and give it a powerful drug that could disrupt its entire brain? And they had no answer. Yet these were the people who were there figuring out how to make even more money by a completely fraudulent pharmaceutical-based psychiatric model. This is from Monica Young from naturalnews.com. Quote, this is a woman who went to the convention. Childhood disorders were a particular popular issue at the convention, but they didn't stop there. Prenatal and newborn genetic screening for mental illness has taken on new emphasis in the psychiatric world. Quote, it's also trying to understand how genetics predict what medications can be used. End quote. Well, having already labeled millions of kids abnormal and drenched their brains in toxic substances, a multi-billion-dollar business, apparently they aren't satisfied. They aim to brand children as mental patients and destine them for drug dependency before they're even born. The conference even touched upon electroconvulsive therapy for children, sending electric volts through their heads. And ADHD is usually promoted as a childhood disorder, but a team of psychiatrists proposed a new definition to make it easier to diagnose and drug older teens and adults. They claim people who tend to miss work deadlines or those who interrupt others in conversation deserve to be labeled ADHD. That would mean that there would be tens of millions more who would daily be taking their medications. And capitalizing on America's servicemen and women was another hot one. Diagnosing and drugging the military for post-traumatic stress disorder and depression and anxiety. Oh, and by the way, I didn't mention that 23 American veterans commit suicide every day, every 24 hours, largely due to psychiatric drugs. So those are the issues. They only look at you and everyone else as an income stream. This is from John Cozy from Global Research. The article is entitled America, an Ordinary Nation Ruled by Greedy, Unjust, and Inhumane People. I'll quote. Washington devoted his farewell address to advising those who would follow him into governing the United States of America. He tried to get them to travel the high road of virtue, honesty, and fairness, and eschew the low road of viciousness, duplicity, and favoritism. Quote, virtue or morality is a necessary spring of popular government. Observe good faith and justice towards all nations. Cultivate peace and harmony. Who can doubt that in the course of time and things, the fruits of such a plan would richly repay any temporary advantage which might be lost by a steady adherence to it? Nothing is more essential than the permanent, inveterate antipathies against particular nations and passionate attachments for others. This should be excluded, and that in place of them, just and amicable feelings towards all should be cultivated, end quote. Almost immediately, Washington's successor began to repudiate his advice, and his New World nation began its descent into an old world, one in which people are pawns who are used as mere means to the ends of unscrupulous power brokers. John Kennedy expressed this status quo sentiment when he uttered the famous line, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. Yet people do not come to this or any other country to serve as means to the country's goals. They come to serve their own modest ends and are happy when their own ends are congruent with the nation's. America's power brokers seem to believe that governments determine the goals of their peoples. Only such a belief can explain this nation's maniacal attempts at regime change. Somehow or other, the belief exists that changing a nation's government will change the desires and attitudes of its people. History fails to support this belief. Careful thinking requires that the people who populate a country be distinguished from the people who rule it. In March 2003, the United States invaded Iraq in an attempt to depose Saddam Hussein's autocratic government. Members of the invading army had been told that they would be welcomed as liberators. Instead, an insurgency emerged which opposed the invading forces. The United States, after deposing Saddam and having installed an American-friendly government, withdrew its military forces in December 2011. The war for regime change had succeeded, but the attitudes of the people who inhabit Iraq did not. The killing continued. The region's political forces were destabilized, and now a full-face civil war has emerged. American troops are again being sent to Iraq. The country may end up being dismembered. Regime change, although successful, instead of stabilizing the region, destabilized it and denied America the achievement of all of its goals. Governments do not comprise countries. People do. Syria became independent in 1946, but in March 1949, Army Chief of Staff stage a coup d'etat with America's help, which ended civilian rule. The chief of staff met at least six times with CIA operatives in the months prior to the coup to discuss his plan to seize power. Once in power, he took several steps that benefited the United States. He also improved relations with Israel and Turkey. However, Zayem's regime was short-lived. He was overthrown just 4 months after seizing power. Again, America's attempt at regime change had succeeded, but it was soon undone by the actions of the Syrian people. Today, America is again supporting regime change in Syria. Failure is no deterrent to an American government. In fact, America's attempt at regime change have failed or been only temporarily successful more often than not, and the countries whose regimes it has tried to change are by no means advanced or developed. America picks on what it believes are the primitive and weak, and even then regime change has not proven to be an effective policy. Of the more than two dozen countries in which regime change has been tried, only one is now a strong American ally. Trying to change the governments of nations is not a way to make friends. Two groups of countries comprise most of America's attempts at regime change, Latin America and Muslim. American politicians have always sought to keep Latin America under the thumb of Uncle Sam. Early in the 19th century, America's fifth president, James Monroe, who is famous for having promulgated his doctrine, the Monroe Doctrine, proclaimed that the Americas should be free for future European colonization and from European interference. Although Monroe claimed that the nations of Latin America would be kept independent, American government continually interfered in their affairs, which formed the subject of General Smedley Butler's War is a Racket book, which exposed the interference. Since then, America has attempted to change the governments of Argentina in 1976, Brazil in 1964, Chile in 1970-73, Cuba in 1959, Dominican Republic in 1961, Guatemala in 1954, Haiti in 2004, Nicaragua in 1981 through 1990, and Venezuela in 2002, and today. A guarantee of independence indeed. America's interference in the affairs of Muslim nations is similar. Since 1949, the United States of America has attempted to bring about regime change in Afghanistan in 79 to 89, then again 2001, the Gaza Strip 2006 to now, Iran 1953, then 2005 to present, Iraq 1960 to 63, 92 to 96, and 2002 to 2003, Libya 2011, Somalia 2006, Syria 1949, then again 2012, and Turkey in 1980. Of these, only Turkey today is an American ally. The United States of America has become the rhinoceros in the coffee shop. I suspect it has generated more hatred than any other nation in history. How has America become this nation belligerent to all? How is this nation that is founded in such a way that is supposed to be guided by justice and benevolence become one guided by shameful injustice and malevolence? I adapted a philosophy of realpolitik. So that is something to think about, and he is accurate on all of his historical facts. And finally, John Whitehead from Op-Ed News, What I Don't Like About American Life in the American Police State. Quote, there's a lot to love about America and its people, their pioneering spirit, their entrepreneurship, their ability to think outside the box, their passion for the arts. Increasingly, however, as time goes by, I find the things I don't like about living in the nation that has long since ceased to be a sanctuary for freedom are beginning to outnumber the things I love. Here's what I don't like about living in American police state. I don't like being treated as if my only value to the government is as a source of labor and funds. I don't like being viewed as a consumer and bits of data. I don't like being spied on and treated as if I have no right to privacy, especially in my own home. I don't like government officials who lobby for my vote only to ignore me once elected. I don't like having representatives incapable of and unwilling to represent me. I don't like taxation without representation. I don't like being bullied by government bureaucrats, vigilantes masquerading as cops, or faceless technicians. I don't like being railroaded into financial government programs whose only purpose is to increase the power and wealth of the corporate elite. I don't like being forced to pay for wars abroad that serve no other purpose except to expand the reach of the military-industrial complex. I don't like being subjected to scams, searches, pat-downs, and other indignities by TSA. I don't like the VIPR raids on so-called soft targets like shopping malls and bus depots by black-clad Darth Vader lookalikes. I don't like fusion centers, which represents the combined surveillance efforts of federal, state, and local law enforcement. I don't like being treated like an underling by government agents who are supposed to be working for me. I don't like being threatened, intimidated, bribed, beaten, and robbed by individuals entrusted with safeguarding my rights. I don't like being silenced, censored, and marginalized. I don't like my movements being tracked, my conversations recorded, and my transactions being cataloged. I don't like how the presidency has developed into a neo-monarchy, replete with all the luxury and lasciviousness of the feudal lords of old. I don't like politicians who spend most of their time running for office, fundraising, and enjoying being feted by lobbyists and corporations alike. I don't like being kept at a distance from my elected representatives, including the president, as if he were an emperor. I don't like free speech zones, roving bubble zones, and trespass laws that restrict Americans' First Amendment rights. I don't like laws that criminalize Americans for otherwise lawful activities, such as holding religious studies at home, growing vegetables in their yard, and collecting rainwater. I don't like the NDAA, which allows the president and the military to arrest and detain American citizens indefinitely. I don't like the Patriot Act, which opened the door to all manner of government abuses and intrusions on our privacy. I don't like the Department of Homeland Security, which has become America's standing army in direct opposition to the dire warnings of those who founded the country. I don't like military weapons such as armored vehicles, sound cannons, and the like being used against American citizens. I don't like government agencies such as the Department of Homeland Security, the Post Office, Social Security Administration, and Wildlife stocking up on hollow point bullets. And I definitely don't like the implications of detention centers being built that could house American citizens. I don't like the fact that since President Obama took office, police departments across the country have received tens of thousands of machine guns, nearly 200,000 ammunition magazines, thousands of pieces of camouflage, night vision equipment, and hundreds of silencers in armored cars and aircraft. I don't like America's infatuation with locking people up for life for nonviolent crimes. There are over 3,000 people in America serving life sentences for nonviolent crimes, including theft of a jacket, siphoning gasoline from a truck, stealing tools, and attempting to cash a stolen check. I don't like paying roughly $29,000 a year per inmate just to keep these nonviolent offenders in prison. I don't like having my hard-earned taxpayer dollars used against me. I don't like the partisan nature of politics today, which has so polarized Americans that they are incapable of standing in unity against the government abuses. I don't like the entertainment drivel that passes for news coverage today. I don't like the fact that those within a 25-mile range of the border are getting a front-row seat to American police state, as Border Patrol agents are now allowed to search people's homes, intimately probe their bodies, and rifle through their belongings, all without a warrant. I don't like public schools that treat students as if they were prison inmates. I don't like zero-tolerance laws that criminalize childish behavior. I don't like public educational system that emphasizes rote memorization and test-taking over learning and synthesizing and critical thinking. I don't like police precincts whose primary purpose, whether through the use of asset forfeiture laws, speed traps, or red light cameras, is making a profit at the expense of those who have sworn to protect. I don't like militarized police and their onerous SWAT team raids. I don't like the Department of Defense and programs that transfer surplus military hardware to local state police. I don't like government programs that reward cops for raiding homes and terrorizing homeowners. I don't like local police dressing and acting as if they were the military while viewing me as an enemy combatant. I don't like being treated as if I have no rights. I don't like cash-strapped states cutting deals with private corporations to run the prisons in exchange for maintaining 90% occupancy rates for at least 20 years. I don't like the fact that American prisons have become the source of cheap labor for corporate America. I don't like feeling as if we've come full circle back to a pre-revolutionary era. I don't like answering to an imperial president who operates above the law. I don't like the injustice that passes for justice in the courts. I don't like prosecutors so hell-bent on winning that they will allow innocent people to suffer for crimes they did not commit. I don't like the double standards that allow government officials to break laws with impunity while average Americans get the book thrown at them. I don't like cops who shoot first and ask questions later. I don't like police dogs being treated with more respect and offered more rights than American citizens. I don't like living in a suspect society. I don't like Americans being assumed guilty until proven innocent. I don't like the fact that 38 states require that a property owner prove his innocence when police have laid claim to it in a civil forfeiture procedure, without or not the individual having done anything wrong. I don't like technology being used as a double-edged sword against us. I don't like agencies like DARPA developing weapons for the battlefield that get used against Americans back at home. Most of all, I don't like feeling as if there's no hope for turning things around. End quote. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone? I'm Gary Knoll. We have two specials today, two. Our first one I haven't had in so long, I didn't even remember when I had it last, but it is one of the most important things I could offer you. Why? Because we need to trap free radicals in our body. When you eat something that creates inflammation and cytokines, you're creating free radicals. When you do a heavy workout, you're creating free radicals. When you're stressed, free radicals. When you eat french fries, hamburgers, hot dogs, alcohol, and any amount, free radicals. In fact, if I had to name the single most important cause of all of our problems, I would say it would be free radicals. So what can you do? Well, the best thing to do, of course, is to make sure that you're eating good quality organic food, juicing, and taking your antioxidants. So I have created a vegan multiple supplement is called Super Antioxidant. So I try to make it easy for you. I put the beta of vitamin A, 10,000 units, and vitamin C, and vitamin E, and B6, and magnesium, and zinc, and selenium, and copper, quercetin, and astaxanthin, L-carnosine, lycopene, rosemary, tocotrienols, raspberry leaf, citrus, bioflavonoids, rutin, bilberries, red wine concentrate, grape skin extract, Chinese green tea, reduced glutathione, cysteine, coenzyme Q10, N-acetylcysteine, alpha-lipoic acid, superoxide dismutase, taurine, pine bark, licorice, broccoli, lutein, cabbage, carrots, milk thistle, and bromelain. Believe it or not, all those in good quantities are in this product. And it is terrific. You're also going to get with us today a free copy of my groundbreaking DVD documentary, Supercharge Your Immune System. The package normally retails for $90, but today it's yours for, you ready for this, $29.99. You heard me right. That's a savings of $60. $60 savings for Super Antioxidant. How do you get it? It's simple. I'm going to give you a number to call. All right? 877-627-5065. I only have 200 of these that I can offer during our special sales. So those who call first get it. 877-627-5065. You're saving $60. It's only $29.95. It's all of the antioxidants that I know of that are important that you would get each day in good amounts, by the way. Super Antioxidant. $60 savings. $29.95. Call 877-627-5065. And finally, I want to mention that we have had an incredible response to the important brand new creation survival stuff. This is where you're getting a huge gallon size with pea protein and brown rice protein and alfalfa and pumpkin seeds and flax seeds, barley, carrots, kale, cauliflower, cabbage, parsley, ginger, spinach, strawberries, chlorella, spirulina, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, kamut, oats, quinoa, sprouted quinoa, sprouted spelt, sprouted kamut, sprouted amaranth, oat beta-glucan, chia seeds, five types of seaweed, blended enzymes like protease, amylase, lipase, cellulase, papain, bromelain, probiotics, 8 billion non-dairy, all that in a delicious taste. So this is something you should have. Now, a lot of people think, why do I need it? Well, okay, then maybe nothing will ever happen and you won't need it. Today in the Philippines, there's a typhoon hitting. It's a mammoth typhoon. And it's going to wipe away villages, people in Bosnia. People still haven't been able to get back to their home 4 months after the worst flooding in their history. And then you have whole farms were washed away. Houses, everything, been there for hundreds of years. Then in England, you had that happen. In Florida, you had flooding. In Texas, you had drought. You have fires in Texas, wildfires in Wyoming, fires in Colorado, fires in California. You have hurricanes. Gee whiz, wonder what might go wrong. So here's how I look at it. I would rather err on the side of caution and know that if anything ever happens where I have to have something that I can survive on that will give me a full range of nutrients I just explained to you, at least I was smart enough to have it there. Has a long expiration date, so if you don't need it, good. Just like a fire extinguisher or a life insurance policy or health policy. If you don't need it, great. But what if you do? What if you do? Think of all the people who didn't think that anything would happen when Sandy happened or Katrina happened or the tornadoes that wiped out 12,000 homes in one town this past year until it was done and they had nothing. So what happens if we have a solar storm and then there is no food at all? So this is why I believe that the prudent, wise person says, you know, I'm going to err on the side of caution. And also, if I go camping, if I go traveling, I'll take it with me and use it. So it's still there, still on sale. So you can give a call at that same number and get your survival stuff. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And if you want to know why you should do that, listen to something that yesterday's guest had to say on this very topic. And he has an engineering background from MIT, Matt Stein, and he is probably America's leading authority on what to do when a disaster strikes and how likely they would. And this is from a solar storm. Right now, give this audience, to the best of your knowledge, the likely outcome in New York, for example, Los Angeles, if there is a solar storm, a magnitude Carrington effect in the United States. Tell us the likely outcome in the next 5 minutes.
Okay, the likely outcome. The first thing is you're going to have no power for months in New York City. You will have, where does a city of 10 million pee and poo when raw sewage starts coming up through manhole covers all down Broadway and Park Avenue? And when you're thirsty like you've never been before in your life, and you go and the only solution you have is the Hudson River or that local duck pond in Central Park that's green and scummy, and there's millions of people peeing and pooing and it's running into the Hudson River, there's going to be rampant disease. And then chances are really, really good that Indian Point nuclear power station, 10 miles from New York City, is going to go Fukushima style sometime within a week to a month when they run out of fuel. And in that case, New York City is going to be polluted for more than two generations. No one can live in New York City and not risk death from radiation poisoning, you know, a very yucky, horrible death. And the reality is similar. In Los Angeles, San Onofre is going to go out. You're going to be without power. There will be no water in Los Angeles. You know, at least in New York City, you can purify water out of the Hudson River. You know, where are you going to get water in Los Angeles? Because that big water system that brings water to Los Angeles that keeps it going, it's just not going to be there. And there won't be water in local rivers unless it happens to be wintertime when this happens. They're just not going to have any water. So they won't even have duck ponds. They'll dry up. They won't even have creeks. They'll be gone. What is that city of 10 million people going to do? Now, they're probably not going to be as radioactively poisoned as New York City, but they're going to have other problems. They're going to have zero water, like not even water you can purify. You just won't be able to get it anywhere. It won't exist because there's no pumps bringing it in. And we have 3 days' worth of food in all of our metro areas now. Everything's on just-in-time delivery. When that internet goes down, when the gas pumps don't pump anymore because they require electricity to pump, when the trucks stop moving, and then 3 days later, we're totally out of food in all of our centers. It used to be there was a month's worth of food on hand in every metro area in the country. Now with just-in-time internet-coordinated deliveries, there's 3 days on hand. So look at the mass chaos. when Americans are starving, when they have no water, when they have diarrhea and dysentery and cholera is going rampant. I mean, you're talking a very, very difficult Mad Max scenario, and for the price of a single B-2 bomber, cheap insurance, we could be implementing a hardware fix. It won't prevent everything bad from happening, but it'll prevent the worst, the collapse of everything as we know it. In 2006, we had a geomagnetic storm even weaker than the 1989 one, and for some reason, it really hit hard in South Africa. It caused 14 of those massive transformers to blow in South Africa. Now, this is less than a tenth as strong, and things like this, like if you go 10 times as strong, usually it goes up logarithmically. Like a 10 times as strong storm means 100 or 1,000 times the impact of that smaller storm, because you reach a certain threshold and much more stuff starts failing. You'd go to a higher threshold, and now a huge amount more stuff starts failing. So you're looking at a situation in 2006 where the only thing they could do was they ordered new transformers. Now, these things are $10 million a piece. They're 100 tons each. You have to shut down a freeway to deliver them. They're custom-made, custom-designed, and custom-delivered. And there's a three-year waiting list to get one right now. But so South Africa, when the rest of the world was working well, no solar storm that hit most of the world, just South Africa, took them a year to replace 14 transformers. The only way they functioned was rolling blackouts for the whole year. All the backup generators were gone in the first 15 minutes or hour after that first blackout. Now, for a whole year, imagine trying to do work when 2 or 3 days out of the week you'd be out of power for 7 or 8 hours of the day. No air conditioning, no lights, no refrigerators, no elevators, nothing. Imagine being a shopping center or a shopkeeper or a restaurant owner and trying to work in that situation. Now, that's only 14. We're talking 370, couple thousand in the world. Most of the places in the world that make these things will be similarly crippled by the storm. So you're just talking sort of...
Now, that's just Matt Stein giving you an idea what would happen if we get a solar storm. And mind you, we just missed a massive one that would have caused a blackout across America for months, if not years. So that's why I believe we should just err on the side of caution. And survival stuff could be exactly what you need. And boy, for what little investment, because I offered it way, way below what it should be, I think that is crucial that you have. So give a call, final opportunity, 877-627-5065, either for survival stuff, the big gallon jar, or the super antioxidant, 877-627-5065. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Let's go over and say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about reopening the Central Park jogger case to investigate possible police, prosecutorial, and judicial misconduct. As you know, that case led to the wrongful arrests of several young men and the wrongful conviction of at least five of them.
We look forward to it right now, Utrice Lead.